It's 8:13 now. Good morning. Well, in the studio with me with the monthly update, I have Robin Geist. She's the Outreach and Development Director with Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
So Cheryl's out of town, so you're taking it on. We're going to talk first about the first ever Outdoor Explorers Adventure Camp.
Yes. So this summer, for the first time, we'll be holding 2-week-long summer camps for kids ages 7 to 12. And what we aim to do with this is provide a combination of structured outdoor recreation activities, such as hiking and mountain biking and river rafting, with unstructured nature free play. And what studies have shown is that this free play time allows children's cognitive observation skills, social interaction skills to develop. And it also, most importantly, instills in them the lifelong conservation ethic needed to carry on our work, you know, generations down the line. So it should be fun. July 13th through 17th, August 3rd through 7th are the 2-week-long camps, again, ages 7 to 12. The camps will take place 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Cost is $300 per child per week. Spots are filling up quickly. Registration opened April 1st. We have a couple left for the July camp and a handful left of spots open for the August camp.
All right, so who's going to be running the camp?
That is Caitlin Willard. She's our programs coordinator, and she has a good background in running camps and getting children out on the open spaces. This camp is a spinoff of our Kids Outdoors program that we launched this year with Holy Cross Ministries. So we are taking the McPolin Farm elementary school kids out onto the open spaces once a month and allowing them to just run around and do what kids do when they're out in nature. You know, they're jumping in mud puddles, they're climbing trees, and basically just learning all of the creative and imaginative things that can come from playing in nature.
Yeah, so is it one big group, or do you have it broken off in smaller age groups?
It is one group per month, but they are the younger children, about ages 5 through 9 for that kids after school program.
Okay, but I mean for the camps themselves.
The camp, I'm sorry, it's ages 7 to 12.
Yeah, but is it going to be one big group,
or do
you kind of break that up into smaller groups?
It'll be one big group, but we will have some volunteers out there, and as well, two of our employees, the programs coordinator and our AmeriCorps intern this year.
Okay, people what, call or email?
They can visit wesaveland.org and click on the Get Involved tab, and that'll take them to the summer outdoor camp, and they can learn more there and also register. They can also call or email Caitlin with questions, caitlin@wesaveland.org.
Okay. Let's see. Also conducting a strategic plan survey. What's this?
So our board of directors is undergoing a planning process right now to determine our priorities for the next 3 years. We are looking for input from the citizens of our area. We know that they're very involved and love our local open spaces, so we want some direction. Just looking forward at what we will prioritize for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking of in terms of priorities?
You know what? We're really keeping our options open. We really want to hear from our key stakeholders what they think that conservation, what the face of conservation should take in Park City and the area for the next 3 years. We have focused on open space in Park City, but as the pace of development increases, there's less, you know, land available. We are also focusing on the Weber River, but we are open to ideas.
Okay, but it's about saving land.
It's about saving land, exactly. We have already had some listening sessions with some key partners, such as the city and the county, private landowners, and other nonprofits, but we would really like some additional public input. They can find the survey by visiting wesaveland.org and clicking on the What's New tab, and that will take them to our survey. We will also be pushing it out on social media, so they can watch for it then. The survey closes April 13th.
All right. And finally, then, you've got the Wild and Scenic Film Festival coming up.
It is. It's our 7th annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival in Park City. For the first time, we will be holding a screening in Salt Lake City. Our area has so much recreational opportunities, and then it's just so beautiful up here that a lot of people from the Wasatch Front come up and take advantage of the open spaces. So we wanted to reach a wider audience and feel that we should be reaching out to some of the people in Salt Lake. So.
Okay.
Dates are April 22nd at Tower Theater in Salt Lake City, and that's a Wednesday. April 23rd at Prospector Theater in Park City, 7 to 9 p.m. both nights. Come early and sign up to win door prizes.
Okay.
People can find more information at the Get Involved tab at wesaveland.org, including the links to buy tickets.
All right. Tickets are how much?
Tickets are $10 in advance online and $15 the day of at the door.
Also, do you have the list of films that you're going to be screening?
We do. The list of films for each screening is on our website. The premiere film that we'll be showing in Park City is called Schools Out, Lessons from a Forest Kindergarten, which is all about getting kids out into nature when they're young. The kids there are ages 4 to 7, and they go outside and play all day no matter what the weather is like. They find that they catch up with the curriculum, the reading, writing, and math, by the time they're 10 years old. So it really helps develop some of those critical skills for children.
All right. You're also looking for some volunteers to help out?
We are looking for volunteers. We have had a few sign up to help in Park City, but if anyone is going to be in Salt Lake on Earth Day, April 22nd, we'd love to have your help at Tower Theater. The volunteer sign-up page is also available on our event page for the Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
Anything else?
No, I think that's great. We have a lot going on this month. So, yeah.
Robin Geist, she's the Outreach and Development Director with the Summit Land Conservancy. Thanks.
Thank you.
It's 8:20 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Soils testing done by the Environmental Protection Agency last fall on Park City School District property indicates that there are contaminated soil issues that need to be mitigated. In the studio, I have EPA staff member Marty McComb, along with Park City Environmental Director Jim Blancano and Superintendent of Park City Schools, Ember Conley. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Marty, let's start with you. So what did the testing reveal that you did last fall?
Yeah, so we collected samples from the school, ran those samples, and what they've shown is there is contamination at depth. Basically, we've gone down about 3 feet. We found soils contamination roughly between 1,000 and 5,000 milligrams per kilogram. If I could characterize it a little bit, most of that contamination is closer to the kerns. The further away you get from kerns, it dissipates, as well as we tested the top cover, which is the grass. So the cover is intact, the cover is protective, but really right underneath that cover, right underneath the sod and the ball fields you see there is where we're starting to pick up those results in that contamination.
Yeah, so did you do the entire property or just right there?
We did do the entire property. We did all the ball fields, we did the areas right around the school, and we did some of the medians between the junior high and the high school too.
All right, so I mean, I had heard that when we built Dozier Field way back when, I mean, we went to Prospector to get the sandy soil, but because it's been capped, it's okay?
It has basically you just really don't want it to be disturbed. You don't want that dust blowing up, and it has such a good soil cover on it. And the infields are so intact that it's really keeping that contamination under the subsurface where you want it. Now, saying that, we do feel like we want to go in and make a little more protective cap, go in and redo that cap, and just to make sure that it is protective in the long haul.
So when you talk about the cap, you mean the entire property?
Yes, the entire property.
All right, so in terms of what you found, though, I mean, how bad is it? I mean, it's nothing that's going to hurt anybody?
No, it's nothing that's going to hurt anybody. There are some spots where it's pretty high. There are some spots where it's about 19,000 in areas, but that certainly isn't across the board. Overall, we've tested again that cap and that cover, and that is far below 1,000, which we feel is protective.
And we're talking lead here?
Yes, we're talking lead.
All right. Anything else that you found?
No, we see a little bit of arsenic in those soils as well, but just kind of looking in this area, we tend to see lead and arsenic together in those soils. But lead is the main driver.
All right. And we know that lead is very dangerous to developing mines.
Yeah. Lead really inhibits the ability to move oxygen through the body. And certainly with developing it with kids and juveniles, that's really what you want to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. So what's next? I mean, what's the EPA requiring that the school district put some money out here and start capping? Or
no, we're working together, actually. We're coming in and proposing to redo that cap layer. So at least the top 6 inches, if not more, make sure that is clean. We're really kind of trying to partner with the school district as they're figuring out where they want that property to go. We're kind of on board with their development plans, and once those are finalized, then we would come in and make sure that cap was intact.
So when you say we, you mean the EPA?
Yes.
And that means that the EPA is going to help out financially here?
Yes, we are covering the cost of this.
So why do you help the school district and not individual prospector property owners or anybody living along the, you know, the soils
district?
Well,
we're here as part of a larger plan. This is just one aspect of it. If you'll remember last time we were here, we talked about some of the neighborhoods we were sampling, some of the results of those. We also feel like people in town need some assistance with disposals, some sampling assistance. So this is only one part of that project that's rolling forward. I would agree with you. People that are living here need assistance as well.
All right. And the EPA has a budget to do that.
We have a budget and we're working with our partners too. So we're partnering with Park City, some of the resources we're bringing to task. We're working with the mining company's been great, one of our partners here. So we're working together to try and find that long-term solution.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, do we have a responsible party here, or are we just going to work together as a group?
We have a responsible party for some areas. We've also talked about doing some areas on the ski resort on the mountains, some of those mining areas that need a little erosion control. So, yes, we do have a responsible party that are partnering with us well.
All right. So is there some kind of deadline that this get done by? Or you say you're trying to work with the school district so that Amber, we can figure out the master plan for the area, huh?
Right. So one of the things that we've talked about continually is our work with the master planning. And one of the redirections that we've taken our master planning for this next meeting on April the 22nd is to start looking in depth at the Kearns campus of what our options are. Of course, I spent yesterday with you speaking about this, and this is one of the many components that really is driving some very detailed plans of what Kearns could be. And it's been great working with both the city and the EPA as we determine what our plans are, and then once those are solidified, then we'll move forward with the soil mitigation.
All right. So, Jim, I mean, as the Park City Municipal employee kind of overseeing tailings, are you overseeing all of this work then? Or
so I'm partnering with Marty to help him identify to help him with that school district solution and any other solutions that might come up. So we are working with the EPA, the school district, and everyone else to make sure that the right solution that will help us in the long term is found.
And it's important to say that exactly what you're going to read in the report that's going to be on our link tomorrow, be live tomorrow, will show that there's not imminent danger to our students or our staff, but we do know we need to have some work done, and it's just the timing of that.
So in the meantime, you do, especially for the younger kids, it's just we make sure that the playground areas are safe because that's where kids tend to put dirt in mouth, right?
Right. And I know that there's a statistic that of how much that they would actually have to eat to have any type of problem. But with that, just what Marty said as far as keeping that cap intact, undisturbed, is critical right now.
All right. So do you expect some work to be done even this summer?
Yeah, so we'll at least be keeping our eye on the property, making sure that cover stays intact. We'll probably continue to do some monitoring, continue to do some sampling as this goes on. But really, as soon as the school district comes up with what they're going to do long-term with that property, then that'll help us gauge how quickly we can move. And we hope it will be soon, yes.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
And I would say that's one of the reasons that we do have a shortened timeline with our master planning, that we have put that together as far as some very critical deadlines to meet with that team and our steering committee, as we have recommendations then that will go to the governing board of what our master planning and our facilities look like.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned yesterday, you hope to do that by the end of the month, right?
Right. So there will be an agenda item both on the 14th and the 28th, specifically around grade realignment. But it isn't just, and I shared with Lynn just a few moments ago, that there's so many moving parts to these conversations, and this is really only one of those. But it will be a discussion item on the 14th and then a decision on the 28th, which then as we look at even exploring a bond as our facilities move forward, that we have specific deadlines that we have to meet in June and July.
Now, do we have somebody on board at the school district offices that deals with soil mitigation? Or
we have, and I would say because we are a small district, we wear many hats. Mm-hmm. So Todd Hauber, of course, our business administrator, has been a key individual in that. Todd Hansen, our maintenance director as well. And so we've all been working together.
So while I've got you here, Marty, I mean, let's talk about the other areas in town. So what else did you find?
So we focused on three main areas. One was the school, which we spent some time on. The second area was what we're calling some of the source areas, which are properties on the ski hill or on the outskirts of town where mining activities were once concentrated. We did find that some of those soils are migrating off of those piles down some of the drainages. So that's one aspect that we're also going to be starting work on this summer, we hope, is to put in some erosion control devices up there. Then when we moved down into some of the neighborhoods, we started in the Marzag neighborhood. That area, there was a volunteer cleanup that went on when you're developing the transit center. We had some sample results that show there could have been contamination in that neighborhood. So we did a pretty extensive survey of those properties up there, and we did find that there's contamination at the surface and at depth. We found that typically EPA would look at maybe a yard-by-yard removal or doing some sort of assistance, but because those properties are so steep and so small, it's difficult to do that kind of work. And we also extended that into a couple other areas. The Daly is a similar area. The Woodside is a similar area. And these are communities that kind of these houses grew up around some of these mining facilities. So we're finding that we're going to probably need to be creative with how we would address that contamination as opposed to going yard by yard. So we're looking at a range of options from outreach to providing some sampling assistance if people decide they would like their property sampled. And then we're also looking at what we can do to provide some sort of assistance when they get to that stage of disposal. If they're doing some work on their property or they want to put in a garden, what would they do with that soil? And those are some of the details, honestly, we're still trying to work out in the next week or two.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about disposal, but sure. Because some of these lots, as your property lots, are so steep, as you mentioned, I mean, it's just going to continue to erode, right? So, I mean, how do you keep any kind of cap or mitigation?
And some of that, I think, is outreach and working with people and letting them know what kind of things they can do to their own property. And that's where we are partnering with Park City to come up with an outreach and assessment program that would provide that sort of assistance or that sort of advice to property owners.
All right. So
the steep slopes and the small lots really are a different challenge from other parts of town that may have impacts like Prospector where it's flat. So that's really the challenge with, especially the Marsac, Ontario is difficult to drive. So coming in and excavating soil may actually cause more erosion. So maybe, looking at keeping it in place and finding a solution that way, as opposed to disturbing soil and potentially creating a bigger issue.
Yeah. And before the EPA kind of shut down the repository there at Richardson Flat, disposal was never a problem. Now it's a big problem because we found out it's so expensive to do it.
Sure.
What are some of the solutions there that you're coming up with?
There's a range of solutions there. I got to admit, we're still looking at that entire range to what we can do. We can try and find a way to dispose of soils locally. We can try and partner with other landfills in the area. I got to admit, it's a complicated, it's a difficult task, but we are looking at all those options to see what would work best and what we can do.
Yeah, and Jim, you'll remember this. I know the Soils Commission had come up with an idea. I mean, is there some way to do some kind of temporary disposal, even if it's just putting out a covered truck or something, that people can come dump their 5-gallon buckets or whatever. And, and then we haul it, they pay $5 or whatever.
Yeah. What you're referring to is the Blue Ribbon Commission for the Soil Ordinance. And they came up with two real findings. One is that the community needed more assessment being done. And one was that there did need to be a disposal option. And so what you're talking about is a temporary transfer station. That is certainly one of the options we're looking at. So, again, the spectrum from educating people, supporting them if they have to come up with their own disposal, and then the opposite end of the spectrum is us helping people directly with disposal, and that's the entire spectrum we're looking at right now.
All right, and now, I mean, your meeting here in Park City, do you hope to have some, final recommendations, that some kind of report that you're going to be issuing here soon? Or?
Yeah, so the next stage is in my program. We do what's called an action memo, which describes what we found and what we propose to do about it. And we are really in the final stages of that action memo, trying to get, and that includes all three of those tasks that I talked about, erosion control on the mountain, disposal, some of the work with the school. So that's the next stage, is really finalizing that document, signing that document, and then rolling forward. Mm-hmm. And that should happen really within the next week or two.
Oh, okay. Something that would be before the city council to approve, or?
That is a memo that will come directly from the EPA. We will probably have a chance to look at that and discuss it prior to you issuing that action memo, I believe. But that will be coming out from the EPA.
Okay. Anything else you think we need to let people know about?
No, just appreciate working here in the community and what people have input that people have given us. I think it's really helped us come this far, and it'll help us come with this final solution that should be out here pretty soon.
All right. Marty, Ember, and Jim, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:35. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've reported, there's been a rash of dog bites in the last month or so. On the phone to answer what we do now is Summit County's Animal Control Director, Brian Bellamy, at least for the next little bit. Good morning, Brian.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So what is the latest on finding out about the guilty parties in the dog bite cases, specifically like Dave Hanscom's case?
Yeah, we're still following up. You know, we have about 12 people who call and says, hey, we know who this is. But unfortunately, they've identified a number of different people, so we're trying to run those down to see if we can make sense of that. But we're still having a number of bites and just dealing with those as time goes on.
Yeah, I'm guessing his is probably the most severe that we've seen, huh?
As of recent, yes. He sustained the most stitches, so.
And what about the case of the dog being shot with a pellet gun? Any news there?
That I don't know. That was being handled out of the sheriff's office. And actually, I'm meeting with the sheriff in about 20 minutes, and I can find out the answer to that.
All right. So are the investigations then done by animal control personnel or sheriff deputies, or it just depends on the crime committed, huh?
It just depends upon what it is, yeah. You know, the dog bites will always come our way, and that's what I want to meet with the sheriff about is when projectiles are being used. To me, if they're pellets, they should probably come our ways. If they're actual guns and bullets, they probably ought to go to the sheriff. That's the discharge of a firearm.
All right. Are animal control personnel, are they trained as investigators?
They do. Matter of fact, they do. They go through some National Animal Control Association training. We have two of them that have gone through those levels. We have those that have not been there as long or are still going through that.
So in the case like Dave Hanscom's case, where we have basically a bite and run, I mean, is there some kind of penalty there?
Yeah, there's no additional penalties for that. There's just essentially when we find out who that is, we have the fine for the bite, and we do have the fine for the running at large. And then depending on if the animal sterilized, it could increase from there.
All right. And the problem that we're seeing with dog bites, is it because the dogs are unleashed?
Well, I'd like to say that that's always the case, but sometimes you do have some dogs on leash that do bite. It just depends upon the animal, but I would have to say the majority of those that do bite are those that are off leash, or the ones that we're seeing.
All right. So what's the latest on the search for a head dog catcher?
We're still working on that. Well, as you're aware, we've brought on another officer who's in training now, and they should be ready to go on their own by the end of this month. And hopefully within about 6 to 8 weeks, we'll have a top dog out there.
Yeah. I mean, what are the qualifications for the job? I mean, at one point, I think we had talked about really wanting a manager.
And that's what we've done. We're looking for an administrator, somebody who has some business background, some good customer service skills, good community outreach. We want this person to not only just be a working officer, but being able to deal with the public and all the things that come with that.
All right. How would that compare with, say, the qualifications for a sheriff's officer?
A sheriff's officer, to be a sheriff's deputy, as you're aware, you have to go through peace officer standards and training, which we do not require, but we are requiring for this, well, we're asking for this position that they have a degree in business or communication or a similar field. But to be a deputy, you know, they look for education, but they also have to have that post-training.
All right. Let's see. Do animal control people, do they conduct any kind of regular patrols, or are they just mostly complaint-driven?
In the past, well, when the economy downturned, they were complaint-driven. But now getting back to fully staffed, we're back in our patrols, and we do respond. I mean, we're responding right now with Basin Recreation. They're having people who are letting their dogs dig up the grass and go after all the voles on their property, so we're trying to help them with that. So we're still complaint-driven, but we also do patrolling again.
All right. So we've got five dog parks.
Yes, ma'am.
How is it, I mean, what do we need to do to keep their dogs on a leash outside of those dog parks?
Well, essentially, you know, we have tried for years to hand out leashes, and that has worked, but now we're stepping up the enforcement. When we're finding animals that are off-leash, we are writing those citations, and we're encouraging people, if they're going to be off-leash, to go to one of the dog parks or go to the new trail that's over off the Olympia Parkway, run amok, and take your dog off-leash there and let it run on that trail.
Yeah. So what are we talking about in terms of a fine for an off-leash dog?
A fine for an off-leash dog right now, the first offense is $100. Second offense goes up to $150. It goes up to $200 for a third offense. And like I say, if the animal is unsterilized, it's not altered, the fine's double. So it'd be a $200 for a first offense if your dog's not altered.
So the five dog parks, are they all here in the Park City Snyderville area?
They are. You have the Run Amok, which is by the Olympic Trail. Actually, Trailside has three areas. Basin Rec has three. They have a small dog park, a large dog park, and they have another trail over there. You have the Willow Creek Dog Park. They have a new dog park at the woods at Party Lane out on Sunrise. And then we have Park City's dog park, which is out on Gilmore Way out of Quinn.
So is the rec district responsible for maintaining all of those out there in the basin?
All except for the Quinn's Park, yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Anything else you can tell us?
No, we just, you know, we want people to step up and be responsible and let people know that everywhere but those areas, your dog has to be on a leash or a lead. We keep hearing people say, well, gee whiz, we didn't know there was a leash law. If your dog's not in one of those areas or on your property, it's got to be on a leash.
All right. When do you think you're going to have a animal control director hired?
We're hoping about 6 to 8 weeks.
And no one's going to be happier than you, huh?
It will be nice.
Okay. Brian, thanks.
Hey, thank you, ma'am.
Brian Bellamy is Human Resources Director for Summit County, also serves as the Animal Control Director. Well, time once again for the free lunch and learn. That's happening tomorrow at the PC Mark in the studio. To tell us more about that, I have Dondi Shearer-Likes, and on the phone with me, Stephanie Vergen, who will be tomorrow's guest. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with you, Dondi. I mean, you can give us the when and where.
So we'll be tomorrow at the Mark between 12 and 1, and we'll have Stephanie Vergen from Oryx Solar talking about switching to affordable and reliable clean energy.
Okay. Again, it's free. People can show up with something to eat and enjoy the conversation.
Exactly.
So, Stephanie, what are you specifically going to be talking about?
Well, we're going to be discussing how easy it is to switch over to solar, to be honest. Solar's never been more easy or affordable than it is today. So, we're going to go through all those different things, talk about the different tax credits that are available, and, help people to move over to renewable energy.
So you work for a business that actually installs, or do you just come in and kind of give a consultant, you're a consultant base?
So I am a representative of ARC Solar. They're Utah's largest and highest rated solar provider in the state. And we provide clean energy for residents and commercial businesses all over the state.
All right. Can you give us an idea? I mean, how much have prices fallen over the last 5 years or so?
The prices themselves, they've actually quite stabled over the last 5 years. You know, we had some different things with the panel pricing going down and things like that, but it's quite stable right now. The real key to everything when it comes to solar is making it affordable through different financing options. So replacing your power bill with a lower solar bill is really the key to all of it.
What is the typical return of investment for somebody?
The return on investment with solar, you're going to produce enough power and save enough money that you're going to see a return usually between 7 and 9 years.
All right. How long does a system last?
Well, the system itself is warranted for 25 years, but they're expected to last upwards of 40 to 60 years on your roof space. So definitely a lifetime investment, and it's very important in this industry to know who your products are and who your manufacturers are as well.
Why do you say that? I mean, because some of the stuff I had read coming out of China just really not as good as they had hoped.
Absolutely. You know, you want to make sure that with an investment like this, that you're choosing not only a product that is tier one and of top quality, but also from a manufacturer that's very stable. You want to make sure that with an investment that could last you 60 years, that the manufacturer is going to be around for the long term. So we do a lot of different research in that industry as well to make sure that we only put the best quality products in our roof spaces.
All right. Talk a little bit about the state and federal tax incentives. These are still ongoing, huh?
Yes. So the state and federal tax incentives are valid until 2016, which is wonderful. And you get $2,000 back from the state government and 30% from the federal government. So lots of money back from the government to help make the whole thing very, very affordable.
It's basically just a tax credit, right? So you just pull it off of the bottom line of whatever you might owe?
Right. They're dollar for dollar tax credits. So, which can get a little bit complicated, but that's why it's so important to have specialists to be able to help you figure out exactly what you're getting back and what type of schedule you're going to be getting them back.
All right. All right, Stephanie Virgin, she's an energy consultant with ORIC Solar. She'll be the guest at tomorrow's free lunch and learn. Donnie, anything else you wanted to add?
No, we just hope to see everyone tomorrow.
Okay. Stephanie, thanks.
Thanks,
Thank
Leslie.
You.